activities of those services by an inspector appointed by the president as head of the national executive and approved by a resolution adopted by the National Assembly with a supporting vote of at least two-thirds of its members. That will be the Constitution, and the Oversight Act would say the President shall appoint an Inspector General of Intelligence nominated by the committee, which is this committee, and approved by the National Assembly by a resolution supported by at least two-thirds of its members. So before we start, maybe let's introduce ourselves as the panel. My name is Jerome Marquet. I'm the chairperson of the panel.
Hello to you. I'm Diane Kohler-Barnard on the JACI and part of the panel.
Good afternoon. My name is Doris Laguta, a member of this panel.
Mustafa Kodekhale, a member of this panel.
Afternoon, sir. I am Peggy Hatebe, and Hatebe with H. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Kenny Mwima, a member of the committee.
Good afternoon. Dirk Stubble, member of this committee.
Good afternoon. Bulelani Makwaneshe, member of the committee.
Hi, Mbuyiseni Ndlozi.
Good afternoon. I'm Calvin Manganyi, office manager.
Good afternoon. My name is Otto Sombekle, committee coordinator.
Thank you very much. We will now give you a chance, 10 minutes, just to tell us about yourself, a bit of your background, after which just give us your vision of the Office of the Inspector General of Intelligence. What do you see as the challenges that are in that office, and your view on how that office can be improved, and some of the challenges that are in there, how you intend correcting them going forward if you succeed in getting the job. Can I hand over to you? You do that in 10 minutes. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members of the panel and committee. My name is Intia Sfezu. I am currently the Acting Director General of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure since August 2020. My permanent position is the Deputy Director General responsible for governance, risk and compliance in the same department. I was appointed to establish this branch to deal with risk management, performance management, as well as consequence management, and to set up governance structures in the department. Prior to that, around 2013, I was the Chief Operating Officer in the Office of the Inspector General for Intelligence for around 10 years in all. I initially started off in the office in 2002 to 2004, where I acted and assisted to establish the Office of the Inspector General. And from 2004, I was permanently appointed in the OIGI. I was the first employee in that office, and I stayed there until 2012 before being transferred to the Department of Public Works. I've had a good decade in the Office of the Inspector General, setting up the functions and assisting the Inspector General. And my position was essentially the role of a Deputy Inspector General in all but name, of Chief Operating Officer. As Chairperson, prior to that, I served in the Ministries for Intelligence Services from 1997 up to 2002. I served under various ministers during that time, providing various counsel and advice on issues of finance, auditing, oversight, conducting investigations into COVID structures, and generally supporting the respective ministers to carry out their oversight and control over the intelligence services. That was from 97. So that essentially, Chairperson, covered my career in the public service. Prior to that, I was in practice. I am a qualified CA. I was in private practice since 1996 until I joined the government full-time in 2004. During that time, I conducted various audits in the private sector at a number of multinationals. I served my articles with PwC and gained experience auditing multinationals. And that generally, Chairperson, is my career in terms of where I spent my time in private practice, thereafter with the respective ministries for intelligence services, and then the chief operating officer in the Office of Inspector General for Intelligence before going over to public works. During my time at the intelligence services, I also began studying towards a master's degree in security studies, which I completed in 2012. So I have the master's degree as well in security studies. And I believe that my strength is that I bring experience with respect to governance and oversight, as well as experience and knowledge gleaned over a 15-year period in the intelligence services in terms of conducting oversight over the four services, domestic and foreign intelligence, crime intelligence, as well as defense intelligence. So I've had that experience, and I believe that I have the necessary credentials and understanding of the national security of our country. I also believe that my time at Public Works has enabled me to better appreciate the security challenges facing our country and has sharpened my appreciation for the dynamics and the kind of challenges we face as a nation. So I appreciate the opportunity I've been given to move from an information organization in terms of the intelligence services where I served from 1998 until 2012, and to move over to public works to experience the functioning of government at three tiers, local, provincial, as well as national government, and to appreciate the challenges in terms of the unemployment, the levels of poverty, the collapsed state of infrastructure, and the level of unemployment and the challenges facing our country and the government. I was able to feel and to play a direct role in dealing with these matters as a Director General, as well as a senior member of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure. So I believe that that experience has equipped me to better appreciate the location of the country and the challenges it faces, together with the kind of solutions we need to develop to place ourselves on a different trajectory going forward. So, Chair, that in essence is my academic and background, as well as my practical experience. And I'd like to, hand back to you. Thank you very much. But, Chairperson, moving on to your second question, the Inspector General's function, yes. I was talking about the first part of the question. The challenges facing the Office of the Inspector General are in twofold. There are institutional challenges and there are functional challenges. With respect to the institutional challenges, I believe that the Inspector General's function is sort of located inappropriately. The Inspector General does not have the necessary functional independence. The office is located within the security services, meaning in essence that the Director General of the security services is the accounting officer for the Inspector General. And I think that is a bit of an incompatibility with independence to enable the IG to carry out his function without fear, favor, or bias. There's this dependency which is incompatible with independence. So one of the first changes I would bring about is to assure some sort of institutional independence for the IG. We could look at the government component as a quick fix. I believe a government component is a cheaper as well as a more effective way to bring about autonomy for the IG that will allow the IG to control his or her own budget, as well as appoint his or her own staff, and make decisions from the point of view of an accounting officer. The accounting officer could be located in the OIGI as a senior official in that office, or alternatively could also be the IG him or herself. So institutionally, that is the biggest difficulty I see. I also believe that the authority given to the minister in the Oversight Act to appoint staff in the IG's office perhaps we've outlived that requirement. I know in the first act, Oversight Act, you also had the ministers of defense and police who were given the authority to second staff to the IG's office. But I think we've passed that phase that the IG should select his or her own staff and should have functional and independence. So I would propose a new structure, and a government component would seem the most effective structure to propose. Second of all, from a functional point of view, there are a number of functions of the IG which I believe are not appropriately clarified. I will start with the review function. The review function is not described. Review is not explained. In fact, in practice, review is often construed to mean an evaluation of performance. But there's no certainty in this regard, and I believe that the review function needs to be clarified. You also have the notion of a significant intelligence failure, and I believe that the intelligence services don't always comply with the reporting requirements for intelligence failure because it's not properly regulated, that the term significant and intelligence failure itself needs to have some sort of understanding and common understanding and definition. So significant intelligence failure is also an area that needs to be properly regulated. Thirdly, I look at the certification function of the IG, and I believe that the certification function is not adequately harvested by the intelligence services. After all, when you look at the certification function, it has a dual requirement. It requires the IG to inform the public whether or not he's satisfied with the report of a service. So what does it mean to be satisfied and not be satisfied? These are important concepts that are not described in legislation, and one would believe that satisfied would mean their report achieves fair presentation, but this is a contestable area. Second of all, you also have the reporting requirement that the head of a service must also report to the IG whether or not anything has come to the attention of the head of a service that indicates the service has done anything that's unlawful, contravene a ministerial direction, or done anything that constitutes an unreasonable use of the service's powers. Those are very powerful statements. And I believe that these were intended to give the public the assurance that our intelligence services are a force for good and have not transgressed the laws and have done nothing that constitutes an unreasonable use of their powers. But this certificate is a secret. It's not published. It's presented to the JSCI, I know that. But it stays here. It's not discussed at the parliamentary level. And the public is no better aware of the outcome of the certification process, although it's probably meant for public consumption, to on an annual basis at least say to the public that these intelligence services are a force for good and they've done nothing that constitutes an unreasonable use or abuse of their powers. And we've lost these opportunities because we've kind of classified and we have excessive secrecy even in the oversight function. So those are some of the important areas, is the review function, the intelligence failure function, certification function. But I'm also concerned with other areas. The IG's recommendations are not binding. And we've had similar challenges in the past where the public protector's findings were also subject to similar contestations. And we need to deal with this. It's one of the reasons that we have not moved from the abuse that we are currently seeing, that the IG's functions and the recommendations are not binding on the services, and they see it as, some sort of nice to discuss or talk about. And there are other issues that I would also want to improve in the office, and that would include regulating all the functions of the IG to have clarity, especially the procedures for conducting investigations if there is not has been done as yet. And I would also want to ensure that we clarify the legal representation of those who testify before the IG. I think that is very important and has become an area of contestation to protect the natural rights of those who provide evidence to the IG. So those are some of the interventions one would make, Chairperson, to improve the functioning of this office. Thanks.
Thank you very, very much, Can I just clarify one thing? When you say if it becomes a government component, did you say that? What does that, can you explain?
Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Yes, Chairperson, the government component is a different institutional form that we have, the Schedule 1 and the Schedule 2 departments. We have the public. And autonomous, but not outside the services.
Thank you very much. Can I open up? And this time, where do I start? Let me just start here.
Hello. Nice to see you again. In 2014, and you made reference to it, you were sent on secondment from the State Security Agency to Public Works. You say that, is that still the norm? Does State Security, why are State Security sending people into other ministries? What's the thought process behind that?
Yes, thank you very much. At the time, the secondment was based on a need expressed by the Minister of Public Works. It was not the State Security Agency who facilitated the secondment. It was the Minister for Public Works who asked for assistance in establishing certain functions. And I was asked whether I would have any interest, and I accepted the secondment at the time. And after 6 months secondment, it was extended to a year, and I accepted a lateral transfer into Public Works.
Which is where I recognize you from. Let's look at the position itself. Could you spell out for us the various functions that the president may, according to the legislation, designate to the IGI, in which case, who exactly then would you report to? Directly to the president or to the committee? We're looking at what you believe are the certain IGI functions which allow you either to report or not to report to this particular committee.
Thank you very much. Just to clarify, you're talking about the president designating functions to the IGI and who the IGI would report to, and to which, for which functions does the IGI report to this committee? Yes, thank you very much. In terms of the act where the president delegates or designates function or tasks, as they say, to the IGI, the IGI then reports directly to the president on that particular matter. With respect to the JSCI, this committee, the JSCI is entitled to refer a complaint received from members of the public to either the head of a service or also to the IGI. And in that regard, the IGI must report on the outcome of the investigation of that particular complaint to this committee. But beyond that, this committee is also responsible for the oversight of the IGI. The IGI is functionally accountable to this committee. So this committee is entitled to receive all the information and reports from the IGI in terms of the functioning of the IGI. So this committee has the functional accountability for the IGI, it resides with the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence. So the IGI's responsibility for his or her functions is to the Standing Committee on Intelligence.
Thank you. You did make a reference to it a bit earlier in your introduction. The fact that if the IGI issues instructions on how to resolve a particular issue, deal with something, none of the services, none of the ministers are actually obliged to take those instructions on board. So what's your plan? How would you attempt to deal with this matter to resolve it and to make the what are now recommendations binding.
Thank you very much. The kind of matters dealt with by the IGI would either talk to matters of compliance or performance, if one had to categorize them very broadly. With respect to compliance, I believe that there should be little debate about the implementation and the enforceability of the IG's recommendations. With respect to performance, areas of performance, it's a little different because a lot of it is subjective. The service may not agree with the recommendation to improve performance of the deal with one or other matter. So there isn't one cut and dried rule with respect to the response on how to resolve this particular area of contestation. So what I would do is I would introduce two recommendations. The first of all is a soft recommendation that I would require the committee, the Joint Standing Committee, to maintain some sort of monitoring mechanism on the implementation of the recommendations of the IG in the services. That oversight is very important from the point of view of bringing about the necessary motivation or impetus by the service, knowing that the GACI is monitoring implementation of IG recommendations. So I would bring greater levels of oversight and also hold the ministers to account for the implementation of those recommendations. Second of all, I want to bring about, beyond that monitoring, I would want to bring about a legislative amendment that as soon as the opportunity arises, one would want to introduce amendments into the legislation to indicate that the recommendations of the IG, where they pertain to non-compliance with any rule, with any law of the regulatory framework, are enforceable. I would want to clarify that. So those were two. The one would be a hard and fast resolution, and the other one would be a soft resolution where require the committee and the respective ministers to bring about monitoring of the recommendations of the IG to bring about implementation. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. Moving on to the IGI's access to intelligence information or premises, does, in your opinion, the IGI have access to all COVID intelligence information or premises? And if so, would you bring the report on such visits to the attention of the committee, whether or not it contained information which may not be released in terms of Section 78B3 of the Intelligence Services Oversight Act?
On the first part of the question, yes, the IG has access to all information and intelligence without any restriction whatsoever. So that's the first instance for oversight purposes, that access is not deniable on any ground in terms of the Act, provided it's required for the carrying out of the IG's functions. So those are the limitations for the IG, but the access is unlimited if those conditions are met. With respect to sharing with the JSCI, the IG would have to make the necessary considerations in order to protect sources and methods and operational information. And I believe that that disclosure can only be made, further disclosure can be made only with the authorization of the head of a service. But I believe that the sharing of information is based on that limitation. The sources, methods, and operational information cannot be compromised.
Thank you. Chair, have I used my 10 minutes? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Zabude.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Good evening, Mr. Faisal. Thank you very much. Section 14, subsection 1A and B of the powers and of the powers, privileges, and immunities of parliament and provincial legislatures, provide for the joint committee to summon any person to appear before it under oath or affirmation, to give evidence, produce reports, and also to give information, whatever information they have. What is your understanding of this section of these of the act that I have already mentioned?
Just to clarify, have you mentioned it, that the Intelligence Services Oversight Act?
The section 14 of the powers, privileges, immunities of Parliament and the provincial legislatures. What is your understanding of that section? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. This particular section pertains to the access to information by members of Parliament and committees of Parliament to all information to enable committees to carry out the oversight function in the interest of transparency and accountability, to hold public departments and public servants to account, and provides the ability of all parliamentary committees to summon any person from the public service, the private sector, and to require all information to be presented to enable committees of parliament to exercise their authority and to exercise oversight over public functions as designated to a particular committee. So my understanding is that the powers within that particular provision provide for these particular emphasis for members of parliament.
Okay. Thank you very much for that response. Mr. Faisal, I'm sorry. The high-level report, the high-level panel report agreed with the 2006 task team report on the reviewal of the intelligence services legislations, regulations, and policies, and the 2008 Matthew Commission's report that the OIG must be given the independent status. What is your views on this matter? And if appointed as IGI, how would you make sure that you the OIG attain the status? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. The independence of the IG is attained in different ways. I mentioned earlier the need to institutionalize the OIGI into a separate entity outside the intelligence services. Currently, the IG is part of the State Security Agency, effectively, as a spending center. The Director General of the agency is the accounting officer of the OIGI, effectively, as the person nominated as the head of department. So what you have the anomaly where the Director General is the accounting officer of an entity overseeing the agency. So this incompatibility I would bring about, first of all, by giving the office of the IG its own institutional status. I mentioned earlier in another question that I would propose that the OIGI be established as a government component. But it could also be scheduled as a public entity, but I wouldn't go that direction, that a government component is sufficient to allow the IG to manage his own budget, as well as appoint his or her own staff and to operate autonomously. So that institutional autonomy is the first intervention one would make in order to bring this about. But what one would also do is appreciate that that independence is also a state of mind. And that state of mind means that the IG needs to carry out his functions or her functions autonomously in the mind and provide the kind of recommendations and findings based on his or her work that is brought about through credibility, through independent mindset, and provide the appropriate direction. So independence is also the state of mind. So the selection of the individual must ensure that the person has the necessary credibility to act without fear or favor, and also understands the business of intelligence, but more importantly also understands the challenges facing the country at large, that the country is on an unsustainable path with respect to our national security and our human security. The level of unemployment and poverty is not sustainable, and the IG should have appreciation for all of these dynamics to serve independently and impartially. So my response is both an institutional response as well as a response that requires a person with certain credentials to do the work. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Mr. Faisal, I can see that you worked in many departments, and in 2014 you were seconded to Public Works. Then why do you were seconded to Public Works from SSA? Then why do you, what is your interest in going back to that environment of the spooks?
Thank you, Honorable Member. Chairperson, I moved from the information organization, which is state security and national security, to a bricks and mortar organization, which is public works and infrastructure. It was a huge transformation for me personally, and it took time to establish my understanding and appreciation for that environment. And I truly appreciate the experience it has given me, and I truly appreciate the knowledge and understanding I have acquired, as well as the opportunity to manage a huge and complex organization . But I don't believe that is my natural home. But I do believe that I'm an information person, that national security, international relations, that's the area that I would like to, migrate into and return to. And I believe that that is where I'm able to make a better contribution and use my experience at Public Works, where one has dirty one's hands with the challenges in the rural areas, in the urban areas, with unemployment . And I've understood the country better as a result of my experience, and I'd like to reuse that rich knowledge and experience and take it to national security, which I believe is my natural environment. I have changed my career a few times. I started off as an auditor in public practice, and I moved from there to national security, where I also studied and learned that business. I moved into infrastructure and learned that business, and I lead the department at this moment. And I'd like to migrate back and use all of this knowledge and experience in intelligence oversight that I've gathered in the past, and bring my appreciation and practical experience in all the departments I've worked for into state security, where I believe resides my natural home. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Do I still have a minute?
Ungilele maqembeni cha. Can we have Honorable Madikhali?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good evening. I'm sure we are now in the evening. Eh? Good evening, Mr. Faisal. You said you worked in intelligence oversight and governance of the state security. So suppose you win this position, and I know there were challenges in that work situation. Suppose you win, how will you improve the relationship of your team, and how will you then relate to various stakeholders?
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. With respect to the respective stakeholders, the question is how I would improve the relationship with the respective stakeholders as well as the team within the office. And I will start with the stakeholders. The stakeholders of the Inspector General are multiple and varied. The stakeholders include, for example, the heads of the services, where we start, and where one needs to develop a very dynamic relationship that ensures a mutual confidence and respect, and an ability to have constructive engagement and the free sharing of information, that intelligence oversight is dependent on sharing information, and that sharing of information is also largely dependent on bringing about constructive relationships with the heads of services. So for me, there is an important place to start is that there should be dynamic and constructive relationships with the services, with the top management, with the members, as well as the heads, to allow the free flow of information from the IG to the service and vice versa, to enable constructive oversight. But one needs to be very careful with the relationship. It must not result in the IG being captured by a service, but maintain a professional arm's length in securing that constructive engagement. Services are responsible in their part for oversight and control as well. They are also part of the architecture of intelligence oversight and control. And one needs to have the confidence of the respective ministers and work closely with them to allow the ministers the opportunity to share their concerns about the intelligence services with the IG, for the IG to share his or her concerns with the ministers, and to work collaboratively with the ministers to bring about improvement in the quality of output of the services, as well as to ensure they work within the framework of the law. So the ministers are important because we share mutual concerns and we provide different types of oversight over the services. Then I will come to Parliament and the JSE in particular. The JSCI is an important stakeholder to the IG. It's at the center of the existence of the IG. the IG is functionally accountable to the JSCI. So the JSCI is a kind of parent to the IG, and the IG needs to ensure that this is a relationship of mutual respect and confidence where the IG is able to share his or her concerns with the JSCI and to table his or her view and vision of the intelligence services with the JSCI. I believe that the IG can only function effectively with a dynamic relationship and mutual confidence and respect with the JSCI. In the absence of that relationship, I believe that the IG and the IG's function is at a significant disadvantage. There must be that mutual synergy and respect between the JSCI and the IG. I have little doubt about that. The other relationship is the Auditor General. I believe that the Auditor General, the Auditor General's audit of the intelligence services is deficient. And after 25, 30 years of democracy, we still have this audit qualification, which is almost a statement of surrender, where the AG is presently qualifying the audit opinion on the grounds of inability to access information and also self-restraint, which is quite clear, in the intelligence services. As a result, COVID operations are not sufficiently audited. I believe that's an area of dynamic cooperation between the IG and the AG, and we've seen it elsewhere in other dispensations. In fact, in some dispensations, the IG conducts the audit as well. So that's another stakeholder, is the Auditor General. See, the Auditor General is an important partner to audit the money and follow the money, and the IG to follow the operations. That an important relationship between the two parties is very important. And I see the AG as another dynamic and important stakeholder. So for me, the heads of services, the respective ministers, and I would also then take this forward to the NECOC and the presidency. That the president is the most important recipient of the outcomes and outputs of the intelligence services. I would want to have a dynamic relationship with the coordinator for intelligence to ensure that the appropriate intelligence information is communicated to the primary users, which is cabinet and the president. And I would want to develop these relationships to ensure that the IG plays a dynamic role as well as a changing role to ensure that the important users of intelligence receive what is required from the intelligence services, and the services understand their needs and meet them. So those are the most important and the five stakeholders that one would focus on. Although there may be others, there's the public I would like to conclude with. I believe the certificate of the IG is being wasted. The certificate is intended to communicate assurance. And I believe that assurance is not being communicated to the public that the services are forced for good and they work within the framework of the law. And that is a very important statement to make, and that is what the law requires, and currently that opinion is being withheld through a secrecy provision. I would see that public engagement as a very important reform in the functioning of the IG work. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Faisal. Thank you for the response. The high-level panel report found that the office of the IG should be given some legislated status. In your opinion, based on the study of the current legislative framework, what legislative amendments are required for this office of the IGI? Thank you.
Honourable Member, the issue of the high-level review panel is also consistent with the recommendations of the Matthews Commission of Inquiry in the late 2000s to give the IG independence and autonomy. I believe that I've also dealt with this in my earlier responses. The legislative status, I would like to contrast it to what it is currently. Effectively, the IG is part of the State Security Agency. The members of the IG are employees of the State Security Agency. The budget of the IG is part of the budget of the State Security Agency. There is very little autonomy functionally for the IG. With respect to legislative amendments that are necessary, The Intelligence Services Oversight Act provides for the functions of the IG. The institutional form of the IG is not legislated at all. The only aspects of the institutional form of the IG is dealt with through the appointment of staff, where the minister, in consultation with the IG, appoints staff to the office. And the budget of the IG is sourced from the budget of the State Security Agency. There is no provision for the institutional form of the IG as a separate entity. And those are the amendments that one would seek to introduce, is to introduce an amendment to the current dispensation, which does not require a change to the Oversight Act itself, but to designate the Inspector General and the Office of an Inspector General as a separate entity. And as I mentioned before, I would designate it as a government component because it's a cheap form of autonomy, and I'm not disrespecting the different forms. But we do have a Presidential Review Commission on Public Enterprises, and we find there are too many public entities out there. We need to rationalize them and ensure they don't attract too much of expense, that they serve their intended purpose. And the government component is the legislative amendment that I would introduce. It's simple. It's through a proclamation of the Public Service and Administration and the minister of that department to ascend to the status change of the IG into a government component. That will achieve all the concerns we have. It will address all of them to give autonomy to the IG to have his or her own budget without incurring significant costs. The IG would remain part of the intelligence community and be administratively accountable to the minister and be his or her own accounting officer and remain functionally accountable to the JSCI as provided for in the Oversight Act. So that would be my amendment to bring about this change. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the response. The last one, the invitation here is to make sure that the IGI has a greater autonomy. There is an urgent need for a legislative review of the functioning and resource of office of the IGI. The current configuration being resourced through SSA has demonstrated that it will be weakened and it will lead to the politicization of the SSA. Logically, who would fund and adequately resource an office designed to hold them accountable? Do you think that the office would function better if the IGI has a deputy? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. The first part of the question is the legislative review of the OIGI and the issue of the motive for the intelligence services to want to support the adequate functioning of the Inspector General's office under circumstances where the IG conducts oversight. And I believe that with all due respect to the credibility of the management of the services, I don't believe there's much motivation to do so. From my own experience, the best circumstance for the services is to manage the IG and to manage the relationship with the IG, to manage the access to information of the IG, to manage the IG's narrative, to manage the IG's perspectives. Those are the goals and objectives of the intelligence services. After all, that's how they think and operate, because their mandate requires that sort of mindset. So I would place very little credence and trust on the intelligence services to aspire to have a great degree of oversight. I wouldn't see it. And as a result, one would want to place very limited reliance on the intelligence services for the functioning of the IG. Insofar as resources is concerned, insofar as budget is concerned, insofar as infrastructure is concerned, insofar as institutional form is concerned, all of these should be located outside the intelligence services, within government, within the security architecture, but outside the services with minimal reliance on the services because of those dynamics, that the services have no motive to maximize the ability of an IG to expose wrongdoing or any sort of exception on their part. So one would want to ensure that accountability is brought about in a different manner with an independent IG. With the second question, Chairperson, I know the, if I can please be reminded.
I was requesting if ever you see any need of the deputy.
Oh, my apology, yes, of course. Yes, Chairperson, I do believe it's necessary when the IG is not available for one or other reason due to illness or whatever other reason, that you have no legal fallback without an IG. And one cannot have that. One has got to have a deputy IG and also a proper delegation framework in place. The delegation framework will allow the conduct of certain functions in the absence of an IG. So I certainly support the use of a deputy IG. In fact, there used to be that system in the past. When I served in the office, I was the chief operating officer, was effectively the deputy. But they moved away from that, and we have just the inspector general. So I certainly would support it, knowing that you need that fallback in the absence of an IG. And there's another dynamic as well, besides the absence of the IG. It's the nature of the work of the IG. One spoke about the stakeholder management, engaging the president, engaging the ministers and heads of services, engaging the JSCI is a very executive intensive function. And the deputy IG or the chief operating officer is responsible for the administration and accountability of the office to manage staff, to manage detailed investigations, and to manage operations. One has got to separate these functions to avoid the IG being drawn into routines. And missing the importance of the question you asked the Honourable Member earlier, is to manage these relations and to see the wood from the trees. So for me, that's the most important reason to segregate the two and to have a deputy managing the operations and allowing the IG to deal with the strategic matters of this particular function. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm done.
Thank you. I took a lot of time. Can I just clarify, you said it twice about the certificates, that they don't seem to be making their way to the public. And I think I agree with that, because even the report that this committee writes to Parliament, it's watered down to some extent. But you never suggested, or how should this reach the public, the certificate? It makes sense. I mean, the public never hear anything about the intelligence services. They don't even know how they operate. But what is your suggestion? Must there be some magazine that goes out monthly, or what would be your suggestion? Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the question. Chairperson, the certificate of the IG is the one instrument, but there's also the audit report of the Auditor General. Yeah, there's also the annual report of the intelligence services. And their annual reports. I would see the need to publish all of these, that the annual reports of the intelligence services and what they do must be communicated to the public. Yes. After all, it's the public we are protecting. So why should we hold secret those affairs which concern them most? So the IG certificate and the AG's audit opinion should both be published. And what one would do is to release them as statements into the media and place them on the websites of the Auditor General and the Inspector General and the JSCI, suitably redacted for information that is classified, that compromises operational methods and sources suitably redacted for that particular purpose. But one would publish them on the website and release them to the media. The certificate of the AG. But what the intelligence services do to increase the level of public confidence and to demystify what intelligence is and to move away from the fear that people have for intelligence services, to have this public consent that we currently seem not to have. I've seen in Canada, Chair, to answer your question, there was a public information request in Canada for the IG certificate, and they released it suitably redacted, and they continue to release it thereafter on an annual basis. Our certificate is very similar. It was drawn from the Canadian Intelligence Act. So we have a very similar certificate. So one would publish it in that manner, Chairperson, but also the Auditor General certificate, as well as the annual reports of the intelligence services, I believe are very important to publish with suitably redacted versions that account for a national security considerations. Thank you.
Just as a follow-up, I think that is done. I mean, the auditor released, as I said, through the JSCI reports. But seemingly, I understand you to mean that it must be released in such a way that people can understand and so on. Don't you think it's simply going to be a shell? After they've taken out all of these things, simply going to be a shell that would never even make sense. I mean, if I was to give an example, SSA, there are a lot of things that they can't say. Maybe they can't say, you know, we spent this amount on this and that, gadgets and so on, because that in itself it's already compromising them. So the format, of course, I'm just imagining somebody in a village sitting there reading something about SSA or crime intelligence. Or maybe my head has been hammered for a very long time. I can't even see that happening on my own. But I can't see in what structure besides the annual reports and so on. It would be nice to have that, but maybe let me just think about it and crack my head on it. I think I talked aloud of what I'm thinking about. Can I then get to? Can I ambush?
H.
Honorable H. Over to you.
No thanks, Chair. It's not an ambush this time around. The last time we met virtually, it was in Scopa, dealing with the Bay Bridge saga. I'm raising this in relation to one of the requirements of fit and proper person to be selected in this office. And one of the challenges that we encountered then in Scopa was the stalling of punishing those that were alleged to be culprits. It took 1.5 years to deal with the matter. Even the minister then was frustrated. And she had this to say: it has become very clear that some of the senior managers in the department have perfected the art of avoiding disciplinary hearings. They play us with laws.
Are you still with us?
Yes.
Oh.
So I'm saying, in terms of us having confidence in you as a fit and a proper person, while you had an opportunity to showcase that you are not tolerant to maladministration and corruption. What have you done since then, and what makes us to have confidence in you that you can deal decisively with corruption when it comes to a very huge department like intelligence? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable member. Chair, I'd like to answer the question in two parts. First of all, I'd like to point out that the Bait Bridge investigation, I led it through my previous job. While I was DDG, I led the investigation, and the investigation was very thorough, without fear or favor, made findings against all and sundry where necessary. And I then found myself implementing the recommendations as well as a result of my acting position. With respect to consequence management, honorable member, I want to point out, and I was in fact seized with these matters very recently in preparation for the next COPA encounter engagement. And what I want to say is I engaged the Office of the State Attorney to bring along the independent, perhaps I should say first, that all these disciplinary hearings are headed by independent persons. The disciplinary hearing is headed by a senior counsel appointed by the state attorney. And one is not able to interfere in their work. And I wrote to the state attorney asking for the chairperson to appear before the next COPA meeting with me to explain the delays in the disciplinary process. And I received a written response from the state attorney explaining that they cannot accept the request because it will compromise the chairperson, or at least a perception of the independence of the chairperson. And they recommended that the initiator, as well as a member of the state attorney, will accompany me to the next COPA engagement to explain the delays suffered in the disciplinary process as encountered by the chairperson, the independent chairperson. So what I'd like to point out, that's one instance. There's another instance where a member of the staff who's been charged has taken the matter to court to interdict the proceedings from continuing. So in one instance, you have an independent member of the bar. In the other instance, you have a court who's not given a date to hear this interdict hearing. So these matters are completely out of our control. So I'd like to say very, very openly and honestly.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I think the explanation suffices because you have 10 minutes to interact. I was just testing your fit and proper
office
in relation to fighting corruption.
Thank you.
I liked your vision when you started. However, you also stated that you were part of setting up of the OIGI and you were the first employee. I assume that you also contributed to the regulations and legislation that accompanied the office. Am I correct in that assumption?
In part, honorable member.
Then you further stated that the OIGI is located in the wrong place and this affect or compromise the independence of the office. Now, as a person who was part of the establishment, why didn't you foresee this or envisage this to be the challenge? Will I be correct in saying you also contributed to the quagmire of the office? Will that be a correct assumption to make as a first employee and as the, I don't want to say you are the co-founder, but as someone who immensely contributed? So today we know who to apportion the blame to, and you are here to try and remedy the mistakes of the past. Would I be correct in summing up like that?
Thank you very much for the question. I appreciate it too. When one looks at the findings from the IG's office in the report of the high-level review panel and then compares it to those of the Matthews Commission in 2007, 2008, around there, they're essentially the same. So what one would say is in 15 years since the findings of the Matthews Commission, we have not implemented the reforms outlined in the report of the Matthews Commission. And I testified before the Matthews Commission. And all of these issues were raised back then in the Matthews Commission. The institutional status of the IG was wrong, that the number of functions of the IG was not properly clarified, that the minister was required to introduce regulations for the functioning of the OIGI. So many of those were raised back then. In fact, I recall that I led a team that wrote many of the regulations. But when I left there, I'm not sure what happened to them. But I had a clear idea, and I've placed this in my CV, on how to conduct monitoring and review, how to certify, and we also converged those concepts with what the Auditor General does. So I would, to the contrary, honorable members, say that I contributed to a proper development of the intellectual capacity of the Office of the IG when I was there. And I also raised the gaps in the Matthews Commission, and they appeared in the report of the Matthews Commission. But it seems like we never moved since the Matthews Commission in 2008, both for the oversight as well as the intelligence services in terms of abuse. We seem not to have put in the necessary checks and balances since the Matthews Commission, and they were reported once again by the high-level review panel of 2021. So I want to give context to your comments that I believe that I contributed to resolving these challenges, but it was ultimately the executive who had the prerogative to bring about the necessary changes. They were really beyond our reach. Yeah.
In terms of the powers and function of the office, 2 minutes. Was I that long, Chair? Really?
Very, very long.
Yeah. I only asked 2 questions, but be that as it may, in terms of the powers and function, that of monitoring and reviewing the activities of the services, the intelligence and counterintelligence, what is your understanding of monitoring and review?
Yes, thank you, honourable member. With respect to monitoring, the monitoring is a reactive function. The monitoring takes place with reference to the referent object of the legislation, the constitution, the respective policies on intelligence and counterintelligence. Monitoring is directed purely to determine compliance or non-compliance. And it supports the function of the IG to determine whether or not the service has done anything unlawful or constitute an abuse of its powers. So monitoring, the referent object of monitoring, is to determine compliance and non-compliance. With respect to review, as I mentioned earlier, one of the lacunas in the legislation, it does not define the meaning of the word review. And in practice, the review function has been construed to mean a review of performance. So it's more of a performance assessment. And that one is also conducted with a view to determining the intelligence activities are contributing to national priorities and whether or not the services are meeting their respective mandates. So review is revolving around the practice of intelligence conduct and performance.
Lastly, if you were an IGI currently and the aftermath of the July unrest in relation to the review, what would you have done as an Inspector General?
Honourable Member, the July unrest was in all intents and purposes a significant intelligence failure. The first thought I would have is that the service has failed to report. I would determine whether or not the service is reporting a significant intelligence failure. Because clearly the July unrest occurred. The intelligence services failed to anticipate it. They failed to report it. They failed to provide the necessary information to decision makers to neutralize it. My first thought would be significant intelligence failure. And I would expect the services to explain what went wrong and to explain any sort of intervention they are making to correct or to ensure a non-recurrence of this particular failure. So that would be my first thought, if I understand the question properly. that a significant intelligence failure has just befallen the country, where the intelligence services has failed to neutralize an event. This is why intelligence services exist, is to identify and to neutralize the events such as took place in July, and they have failed. I hope I understand the question, but that would be my response.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much. I see Honorable Muimang doesn't want to say anything.
Can I put on glass too?
Okay.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Stafeza. Just the one aspect that I want to tease from you, particularly given the fact that you were at the center of the conceptualization of the implementation of the IGS office, given the position that you occupied, I want to believe that you are able to make a reflection in terms of the work that was done by the previous IGIs, one during the investigation that was done by the IGS office with regard to the Hawks mails, with the investigation of certain Mr. Makozova. And then the second period relates to the work of the IGI and Ms. Faith Khadebe, where there seems to have been a close proximity between the IGS office and the State Security Agency. And then the third one that I want to talk about is the current incumbent, with the tension between the office and the former DG, where the top clearance certificate was withdrawn. from your understanding, what could be behind this variance in terms of the relation between the IG's office and the ministry? Could the rationale behind this variance be attributed to the what we call the proximity between intelligence office and the executive, or between the intelligence office and the decision makers? From where I come from, it is inevitable, given the importance of intelligence in terms of guiding the decision makers, this proximity is inevitable. So if you could just make a reflection on those variants across those three periods, with a view to see as to whether is there something that you can offer, having made a reflection on that and having been the person that was at the forefront of the implementation process and the setting up of this office. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. I certainly see the evolution of the IG's office in three parts, as you explained. That the period of the hoax emails, where I served, that was a period of establishment and consolidation. I think the Inspector General, we always consider the Inspector General at the time to be the first Inspector General, even though there were others who served very short periods. This was the first substantive opportunity to embed the role and function of the Inspector General from around 2002, 2004. And this was the period of bringing about the credibility and laying the foundation for intelligence oversight. This was a period during which the hoax emails were exposed and the abuse of the intelligence services for political purpose was exposed. And I see that as a foundation period. In fact, I also see this period as a lost opportunity, because the hoax emails, as well as the exposure of the political abuse of intelligence by the domestic agency, was an opportunity to course correct. And instead, after 2006-2007, it seemed to have intensified, as expressed in the report of the high-level review panel. So I believe this consolidation phase had already pointed out significant red warning lights about the abuse of intelligence and abuse transpiring at the time, and the opportunity was lost. I then move on to the period of the Inspector General Faith Adebe, and I believe that during that time, there, in my view, there was controversy about some of the reports of the Inspector General and the credibility of the functioning of the office at that time. And there was certainly certain perceptions of a closeness between the IG's office and the executive that was not in keeping with the independence of that office, and perhaps tainted the reputation of the office at the time. And I've seen the current incumbent and followed some of the testimony before the Zonda Commission, and one can currently can clearly see an Inspector General that operated without fear or favor. I saw an Inspector General there with a backbone, even though I don't know the person at all. And I believe that the independence and credibility of the IG's office was established. And I say this as an outside person looking from the outside onto the inside. The credibility of the office established, and the work of the IG also demonstrated in the public space very credibly. And I see that is an opportunity that one can capitalize on going forward. So I would then answer the second part of the question in expressing that in terms of my understanding of the evolution of the office, what I can bring. I believe that the intelligence services have lost their way, and I use a high-level review report as a source of information. And the agency is in requirement of some sort of public consent. We need to rethink the legislation governing intelligence. We need to rethink the white paper. We need to rethink the whole concept of public consent. And we need to have a shared understanding of what national security is and rewrite some parts of the legislation to define and refine the mandate of the intelligence services, which is in some places too broad. We need to define it in objective terms, especially domestic intelligence, but also counterintelligence, very dangerous mandates which are susceptible to abuse. And all of those, I believe, then give rise to some sort of transformation within the intelligence services, especially state security agency. And this transformation must be led on the basis of that review of the architecture of intelligence, the white paper, the national security policy, as well as amendments to legislation. And then we need to embark upon a serious transformation of the state security agency and bring about a new theory of change. And I say that is to realign and reprofessionalize the state security agency in particular, to reprofessionalize it, to respond to the security threats the country faces, and to become a lean, professional organization that has respect for the law and respect for the Constitution. And I believe this is where I can assist because of my understanding of the role and function of intelligence, as well as my experience running complex organizations in government that require serious transformation, and my appreciation of the intelligence services and their history. In fact, I recall in 1994 was another amalgamation which we seem to forget, is where we amalgamated statutory and non-statutory, where enemies came together, and I was part of that process and the aftermath. And I believe this is another time where we face a huge challenge, and I believe that my understanding of government, of the intelligence services, and also transformation of complex organizations, I could play a role as an oversight practitioner in the role of an IG to support and oversee and monitor the intelligence services to make this transformation, which I believe is critical. I believe that the intelligence services, in particular the SSA, is in a poor state, to put it mildly, and I believe I could play this dynamic role in supporting the change that is required. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Faisal. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. This time it was put on. Some bit of improvement from your side.
We're getting there, Chief.
Yeah. Honorable Stebe.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, sir. I just want you to make, there's something that doesn't seem right to me. In your document that you present, your CV, in the date 2004, under employment history, 2004 to 2012, let me start at 2002 to 2003, were acting chief operating officer in the Office of the Inspector General for Intelligence. That's correct. But 2004 to 2012, you was the chief operating officer, Officer of the Inspector General for Intelligence, and then in brackets, Deputy Director General. What is that Deputy Director General referred to? Was it your position, or was that the position of the Inspector General? Just do that for me,
please. Yes, I would have been referring to my level, that I was a Deputy Director General. I was appointed as a DDG. The Chief Operating Officer was the title of the position. It was at the level of a Deputy Director General. That's what it would mean.
Okay. It sounds strange to me because that terminology is not used nowadays. We're talking about the Inspector General and not the DG or office. Well, fine. Then just one thing, the relationship and reporting lines between the ministers and the IGI is key for stability and efficiency for the office of the IGI. Now, how will you strengthen that office under the current legislation?
So, to clarify, you are referring to the reporting lines between the respective ministers and the IG, and how I would...
It seems to us that there's not, I won't say animosity, but the trust is maybe not there all the time. How will you go along under the current legislation without changing it to strengthen that and work with those people?
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I want to say Honorable Chair. See, the Chair is not there. Honorable Member, thank you very much. I think this is a very practical question with practical considerations that one often sees that the respective ministers and the IG don't have the appropriate relationship. And I think that is the thrust of the question. I think what is important is a building of relationships there as well, where we spoke earlier about stakeholder management. That the IG and the ministers have common interests. They're both responsible for oversight in a different way. The ministers are responsible for establishing policy as well and superintendents. So their functions are somewhat different, but it's also part of the oversight architecture. If there's a poor relationship between the minister and the IG, it speaks to a failure to appreciate the mutual needs and interests of the parties. The IG needs to understand the respective minister's thinking from a policy perspective, what they expect from the intelligence services, and how they're representing the legitimate policies of the government of the day. If the IG can't understand that, the IG cannot conduct oversight effectively. So the IG needs to reach out to these ministers to appreciate the dynamics and to also appreciate their thinking and what their priorities are in order to conduct effective oversight. And mutually, the ministers need to see the value of the IG as the only practitioner with full and unhindered access to intelligence information. So that failure speaks poorly about the IG and the respective ministers in the event that the relationship is not dynamically formulated and implemented. As an IG, one needs to reach out to the ministers, develop this warmth, mutual confidence, and develop appropriate linkages with the ministers, regular engagements, regular meetings, sharing of reports. The Act requires that all the reports of the IG need to be submitted to the ministers, the respective ministers. So that is the platform for engagement. Anything outside of that platform is a failure on the part of the IG. a lack of respect and lack of appreciation by the parties of the importance of that relationship. So one would use the reports of the IG where the legislation requires these to be tabled with the ministers as the medium through which this relationship must be established and maintained. Thank you.
No more questions, sir.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mahwanisha?
No, thank you very much, Chair. Good evening, sir. No, I only have one issue to raise with you. You talked about a government component that you advocate that the IGI's office must be supported by a government component. Now, my challenge for me with that approach is that the office itself derives its function or from the Constitution, Section 210, and then that makes it, in fact, even the appointment, it must be a two-third majority by the House. And then if you look at the Act itself, the Intelligence Service Oversight Act, it requires the office to act independently. Now, if you combine all of those things, how will you enhance the stature of the office if it is just a governance component?
You said that is the only question you have.
Yes.
That makes me happy.
I can see that the chair wants us to take that direction.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Honorable Member, the institutional form for the IG would enable the office to receive its budget directly from the National Treasury, to have its own financial statements, to appoint its own staff, and to reduce the dependency on the agency or any intelligence service that it oversees. But it wouldn't detract from the constitutional appointment of the IG or the functions of the IG in terms of the Intelligence Services Oversight Act. It's merely an institutional form, and I assure the Honourable Member it wouldn't detract from the importance or the status or the functions of the IG in any way or form. So that's my technical response, but I'd also like to add, if I could, Chairperson, that it's not beyond the realms of imagination that the IG's office could also have been an institution protecting democracy, a Chapter 9 institution. That's also something that could be considered by Parliament in their deliberations in elevating the status of the Inspector General to the level of the public protector, whose terms and conditions the two officers share in terms of conditions of employment. That's also not a far-fetched possibility that the IG could be seen as one of the institutions protecting democracy. It's a parliamentary question, I think, for the committee to also deal with. The government component is probably the least sophisticated form that will allow autonomy and independence, but wouldn't detract from the status of this function at all. But then there's also Chapter 9, but that's for the committee to deliberate. But there's every possibility that it could be a human rights commission or a public protector. The IG could also assume that status and that level. And I would also propose that that be considered. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In your CV, page 6, from 1997 to 2002, it's under employment history. Consultant to the Ministry for Intelligence Services. What do the consultants do in the intelligence services? And then we'll follow up to that.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, at the time, I was approached by the First Minister, and I'm honored to have worked with the Honorable Minister, Joan Chlandla, Joan Dala Umar. They approached me to assist with certain functions and conduct investigations, but I was still in practice. So I worked for 2 days a week for the minister, and I continued with my practice for 3 days. And that went on for a few years. Minister Joan Chlandla was then, he became a full minister. He was a deputy minister for intelligence under the Minister of Justice at the time. And in 1999, became a full Minister of Intelligence, and I continued to serve Minister Chlandla in that capacity, as well as the successive ministers who followed him on that arrangement until 2004, where I completely left. I approached the conflict, where I was asked to stop working for 2 days a week and consider joining full-time. That is what happened in 2004, that I left the private sector completely to work full-time for the government. And the consultant refers to that period when I used to work for the ministry for 2 days a week and continue my practice for the other 3 days.
I was actually asking, what actually were you doing? Unless if it's not for public knowledge. Maybe it's classified. Okay, my honorable doctor.
Thank you. You were in the Benoni Youth League in 1983, correct?
Yes.
Wasn't it called Congress, not Youth League?
Benoni Youth League. BYL, Benoni Youth League. Yeah.
And then in 1994, you were in the same branch as an election strategy and canvassing member of the ANC. Do you know Honorable Magwanisha?
I don't remember him.
You don't remember him?
No.
He was in the same branch. You don't recall him?
No, not at all.
Okay. You worked with Comrade Steve Chwete?
No. You're talking about the late?
Yeah?
Yes.
You worked with him?
No, no.
Okay. Do you know TikTok?
Not that I can recall.
You don't know TikTok, a social media platform?
Oh, I see. Yes, I'm aware of it, but I don't use it here.
Oh, it has 9 million members in South Africa, give or take, I'm told. What do you think are the cybersecurity threats it poses? I mean, if tomorrow you were to be given a task by the president as per the act to look into it, what would be a framework to investigate some of the cyber security threats that it poses? I have 10 minutes with you, so you got to come back. Yeah, go.
Thank you very much. I was just noting your question. Thank you very much, Honorable Member. The cybersecurity threats that TikTok could pose. For example, one of the threats that it could pose is to be used as a platform for dissemination of hate speech. For example, it could also be used to disseminate malicious messaging. And all of these could constitute a threat to security. We note last year in the July incident that social media was used in a large way to propagate negative information, to incite people and to mobilize people in a negative way, which constituted malicious propagation of messaging. So I see TikTok similar to WhatsApp and others, Facebook. They could be used for the nefarious purpose of disseminating negative propaganda and malicious speech that could incite people to take up violence and to act against the security of the state.
So this is a big thing. You know, Mark Zuckerberg appeared in front of the U.S. Senate to speak to some of these important things you mentioned in relation to Facebook. What are some of the things that could be done to avert these challenges? What should these users or platform owners be subjected to, for instance, to prevent data harvesting, pornography, or for foreign agencies to open accounts and operate them from in a no man's land? What are some of the mechanisms that could be used to avert these cybersecurity threats?
Yes, we've recently had legislation to deal with some aspects of cybersecurity. One of the important interventions that one considers necessary is to work together with these service providers, the TikToks and the Facebooks of this world, and to also compel them to have certain responsibilities. And I believe they do. There's a certain level of monitoring that is necessary by Facebook to manage the content that's appearing on its platforms, that it cannot be circumstances where anything goes, that their platforms can be abused. They have a responsibility for taking down inappropriate content, for reporting inappropriate content to the law enforcement agencies, and to monitor how their platforms are being used and whether they are being used for social purposes or to disseminate inappropriate information, hate speech, or also to mobilize the public in a negative way, also to provide disinformation to the public, to mislead and ill-inform the public, such as elections and those which we have seen taking place. So the first thing is to create the responsibility on the platform owner to monitor content.
But that is already there. It was already there during the riots last year. Let me just continue. I mean, there are interesting innovations of artificial intelligence which poses both benefits and threats on site. I mean, to the banking systems, to electricity in relation to the grid, but also to the office of the IGI's protection of its own information, of its own data. What would you do tomorrow if we approach, make you an IGI? What artificial intelligence tools would you take advantage of to build some kind of a defense for the IGI's office?
Look, Honorable Member, quite honestly, you know, I would want to limit the IG's access to cyberspace. I would want to maintain a low profile in terms of allowing access by the public and third parties to IG.
But I'm looking for artificial intelligence tools that you would immediately, you know, look into. There's lots of innovations that are coming out in relation to artificial intelligence and cybersecurity. There's a big problem in the IGI's cybersecurity concerns. There are big concerns there. Have you looked into that?
Well, with respect to the intelligence services, I would agree.
No, the IGI.
The IGI itself. No, yes. I've not looked at the IGI using artificial intelligence.
No, I don't think he does. I think I'm saying there are huge cybersecurity problems for the protection of the IGI's information. SSA agents have often been noted to have access to ongoing reports that are being saved within the networks and the cyberspace. But I'm saying that there are innovations that are coming out of, you know, artificial intelligence that could be employed to avert those challenges that we should be taking advantage of. I'm asking you if you've applied your mind to that. Maybe you could just tell us what cybersecurity vision you would have. Intelligence today is really about the cyberspace. Majority of what we do in this country needs to be protected, concerns as well as cyberspace. But how would you protect the IGI's office from cyber attacks?
Yes. No. Thanks for the question. Look, quite honestly, you know, I've been in that office, and there's a real fear that the information you have at your disposal will be compromised. The information provided to you by the intelligence...
When was this, when you were there? Last when you were there? Which year?
Yeah. I was last there in 2012. Yeah. To the end of it, 2012, around there, yeah.
That's before the fourth industrial revolution, or
yes.
Is it...
Yeah.
So I'm asking you about artificial intelligence and the innovative tools that are coming out for the protection of against cyber attacks. What would you do if we appointed you tomorrow?
Look, from the IG's point of view, I wouldn't want to be too brave with respect to how information is managed and disseminated in the office. In fact, I may not be answering your question by making the suggestion that I would like to see a situation where the IG possesses a minimum amount of information that can be compromised. Information should not be removed from the intelligence services. The oversight must take place on site, and the IG, only reports should be developed by the IG. Any information or source information or sensitive information should remain under the custody of a head of a service.
What tools would you build to protect the information of the IGI that it doesn't get hacked?
Sure. Okay.
Do I make sense now?
Yeah.
So the IGI collects the certificates, the investigation, the data. What would you do? What tools coming out of AI would you use to protect the IGI's office from cyber attacks?
Yes,
you want to be an IGI. You should be able to have a sense of this. Am I correct?
Yes. Look, first of all, one would want to introduce firewalls to ensure that your systems are protected. Nobody can enter your system.
Are firewalls part of AI tools?
In part, yes.
In what way?
Well, firewalls prevent unauthorized access to your systems.
How are they artificially intelligent?
No, I hear you, yeah.
You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Why should we put people as IGIs who don't apply themselves to the questions of the Internet of Things? The innovations, I mean, the entire cyber warfare is at the center of the coming attacks. I don't know. Why should we do this to ourselves as a country? You want to be the IGI. And one of the central things that must happen is to be able to know how cyber attacks, how the hackers are working, but to be in tune with the innovations of artificial intelligence, the machine of things, machine learning. Why should we do this to ourselves as South Africans? Could you motivate us, like, have an opportunity, I'm pushing you to help us. We hear the laws, we hear white paper, 90s.
1 minute.
Why must we put people who don't have a vision in relation to cybersecurity?
Yeah, look, perhaps it is a surprise question, but cybersecurity is an essential part of where we're going. Artificial intelligence is equally important. In fact, the intelligence services, the access to technology of the intelligence services, the ability to monitor all technology, movements of people, financial transactions, the use of technology to keep them alert and to monitor developments is critical. So I think artificial intelligence is an essential part of this. But as an IGIS office, I wouldn't want to establish an IGIS office itself that is vulnerable to technology and hacking. I think the IG should ensure that information is kept confidential. But the services, quite certainly, the intelligence officer for the future, artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, use of technology to conduct all forms of intelligence and monitoring is critical. So I see that as a critical part. But for the IG, I don't see artificial intelligence as a critical, you know, any foundational issue for the IG. But for the intelligence services, most certainly, I see it as central to what they do in the future.
Thank you very much. On a lighter note, if the question was asked to me, I would say I will Google.
Which means our candidates should have done very basic research.
Okay. I think we have got 10 minutes. Any follow-up?
Only one.
Do we have only one follow-up? Okay. 2 minutes.
Yes. I really want to redeem you or myself. I think that a lot of our world is becoming very much about algorithms. You know, the banking system, the way we do electricity, we are conversing most of the time in the last 2 years. Parliament is held in the internet space. That's where things, they are not going, they are there. The IGI's office, it's not true that it does not have to protect itself against AI attacks or the benefits or the usage of artificial intelligence for cyber attacks. They could attack you as an IGI and rob you of sensitive classified information, use it to destabilize the country. This is critical. I want you to react to my disappointment that you think those benefits are not important for the office of the IGI. What is your reaction to the office of the IGI? What's your reaction to that?
Yes, look, I will look into it and apply my mind. I don't want to be dishonest in my response. I see the technology and the artificial intelligence as the bedrock of the conduct of intelligence in the future, that the intelligence services need to sharpen, to be sharpened from a technological point of view, from using artificial intelligence to see and to anticipate threats. But as an IG's office, I respectfully want to submit that I would, in fact, wouldn't want to connect the IG systems to the internet and to cyberspace at all at this time. I would want to tread carefully and support the intelligence services. I see this as their future. But the IG and oversight, I think we need to maintain a certain level of discretion, and I would rather be conservative at this stage and how we deal with technology.
Thank you very much. At this point in time, Mr. Faisal, I will give you a chance for comments on the whole process. If you have anything to tell the panel, or if you would like to say anything, it's your chance. 2 minutes.
Yes, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Can we be in order? Can we be in order? It's on the platform. You are still on the platform.
So, thank you very much. Yeah, I just want to say thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, and you are released.